This is the radio industry's very own radio station. 24/7 in radio.
Hello and welcome to Third Sector on In Radio. I'm Dom, and this is the first edition of an all-new, slimmed-down look of the programme. Rather appropriate, really, as with the new year, I've been generally trying to behave myself. I managed to slip down a notch on my belt this week. I thought you'd be interested. Anyway, this is the new Bijou compact version of Third Sector, and now becomes a speech-only offering, but very much in the same spirit as what I've been up to for the last year with the programme, as I venture forth up and down the country, reporting on and finding out all about community media here in the UK, and occasionally stepping out overseas as well. This programme features a couple of conversations I had at the Community Media Association's AGM event in December at Broadcasting House in London, as well as the annual opportunity for members to be informed and to get to grips with the ins and outs of the National Representative Organisation for Community Media. We were also given a number of interesting presentations, two of which appealed to me particularly, and my microphone alerted accordingly. In a moment, my conversation with Jane Mowat from the Wickers World Foundation, and then Paul Pennington, who tells us all about Word on Health. But with Paul, as the conversation developed, I was aware that I was talking with somebody who has a sharp eye for and lots of experience in the community radio sector. So the course of our conversation spilled over into the general area of how community radio is financed in the UK. Now, generally each week, I like to profile at least one community radio station. And it was a few months ago now that Wickham Sound launched. And a few days later, I found myself in their studios talking with Pippa Sawyer, who has driven that project from inception to finally coming on air as a licensed broadcaster. And you can hear the real exhilaration in Pippa's voice as she describes not having to turn the radio station off when yet another RSL comes to an end.
In radio.
Alan Wicker was a broadcaster that so many of us will remember very fondly. And for decades, he was just a part of our broadcasting world, from Second World War correspondent onwards. In fact, one of my fondest memories of him was one of his last pieces of work in which he revisited Italy to reminisce about his time in the army, and he was part of the Allied invasion of Sicily, which then got a foothold at the bottom of Italy, which ultimately was a European invasion long before the more famous Normandy landings. I don't think he was a person of great rank at that point, and he describes with his surprise and something of a smile on his face when, and I think it was in Milan, the German authorities surrendered an enormous chest full of gold coins to him. It's always been my ambition, where possible, to interview the great interviewers, those people who have informed me and so many other people as we develop our broadcasting skills. Sadly, it was not my chance to do so with him, but when I met Jane Mowat, I was intrigued to hear about his legacy.
Well, the great Alan Wicker, broadcaster on radio and television, when he died, he left a legacy fund to help the future of documentary, which needs a lot of support anyway. So I was announcing the details of the Radio Audio Funding Award and also Radio Recognition Awards, Film and TV Recognition Awards, and a SAGE Recognition Award for people who are over 50. So there's quite a lot of awards that I've just mentioned, and all of them can be found on wickersworldfoundation.com/something, which if you do a Google, you'll find it. I should know it. I think it's .com. Anyway, we are giving away for the radio and audio £5,000 for a great documentary idea that's about personal, intimate stories, and £2,000 to the runner-up, and the closing date is at the end of February for that. And also, we've got recognition awards in all those categories. So if people have already made something fantastic in the documentary sphere, then they can apply to get recognised and get £5,000 and £2,000 as well.
What safeguards are in place so that not only the professionals, the people who do this for a living and get paid for it, will sort of scoop the lot? I'm imagining, hearing you talk, that there's an ethic of open access here.
The whole point of this is to get new voices and to enable people to have a say that wouldn't have had a say otherwise. So it's really important to hear those new voices. And The winner of the Radio Audio Award last year was a podcast, so very low cost of entry, and it's somebody who's got their own very small business. It's a one person band. Obviously we've got to put the money into a real company account, but you can have an association with a company and they just have to vouch for you. That's our only stipulation there, but it's genuinely about great stories, and the great stories will win. You don't have to be in a big organisation. In fact, you're more likely to know about them if you're on the ground, and then that's what we're after.
And could you give us an example of what you would consider a great story?
Well, the one that won last year was inside a hospice in Margate, and it was about the access. It was called Little Volcanoes, and it was about the access that was given to the presenter to get inside such a personal space and to have a lot of time there and to really make you feel as if you were inside that space and hearing intimate stories that were very important to those people and very important to all of us to hear. But it's that getting inside and having a nice lightness of touch as well. In a hospice, you don't imagine that, but it's how you ask questions and really your insights that you bring as somebody asking those questions is just as important. As you know, Alan Wicker had his own personal style, and we're not after people being Alan Wicker because I don't think anybody could replicate him, but we are after people who've got a real sort of sense of the sorts of things that they want to know from people, and it's very people-centred storytelling that we're after.
Sounds great. I feel inspired actually just by hearing a little short section of that hospice clip. So best of luck with it. Do keep in touch with the Third Sector show.
Thanks very much. I will do.
Jane Merritt talking to me there from the Wickers World Foundation. And it is .com, by the way, and well worth checking that website, because some of those opportunities she was talking about have had their deadlines extended. Let's move on to Paul Pennington and his regular community radio feature. What's it all about? I was intrigued to know.
Word and Health is a radio series that I and my team make freely every week for community radio across the UK. We're broadcasting from, would you believe, Stornoway to the Scilly Isles on 91 independent community radio stations. It's a 3-minute interview-based report, and the idea behind it is to generate awareness for conditions and for causes that find it hard to get involved in traditional media outside the BBC. And we offer 3 minutes worth of time, which is then multiplied by all the stations that play it. And we worked out recently that every 2.5 minutes somewhere across the UK, we're putting out a health message thanks to community radio, which is giving a voice to the 591 charities, healthcare charities, who vitally need to raise awareness of issues, raise funds just to continue going. So it's a pleasure and honour to do it. And as I say, on behalf of those organisations, it is fantastic to have the platform through community radio to reach places that other media doesn't.
It's quite clear that you have a passion for community media and you really want to engage with it. Let's just take a sidestep for a second. How do you think we in the UK, whether licensed or not, people employed in audio, radio and media from the community angle, how can we be used more by, for instance, government departments, the health department, for instance, and local care provision, health and care provision, to use community radio to offer positive health messages, such as the Radio Centre organised for commercial radio, for instance?
Well, I think any broadcast platform offers potential, and it's about how you use that potential, really. And of course, it's about promoting that platform out there so that people can engage with it. And we have to understand, of course, that the centre of community radio is one thing that we are brilliant at the UK, and that is giving. Whenever we're called upon, whatever it may be, no matter what our situation is, no matter how much little we've got in our pockets, we'll always give to individuals that we perceive as being worse off than ourselves. Now, that might not necessarily be the case when you look at some of the depravity and the austerity methods that have created the difficulties in society that we have today, but we'll always give. So I would say it was one of those terms, wasn't it, Dom, some time ago, big community. David Cameron talked about how we should be doing more. And of course, when you look at community radio, 2,500 volunteers, day in, day out, making stuff for their community, by the people, for the people. It's a fabulous model. And I think that what we need to do is pull together as a community, go to government and say, look, here it is. This is an opportunity for you. And what you should do, really, Westminster government, is possibly follow the model of the Scottish government as well, which seems to have had far more involvement in community media, and also as well allocates as part of its budget a certain amount of money which goes into advertising sponsorship for Scottish community radio stations. Why not take that example and bring it right across the UK? Why not see it in England, Wales and Northern Ireland? Because we're at a time here, at a crossroads for community media, because there are restrictions, there are funding issues, there's never enough money for everything. And, you know, from a government perspective, how do you make that choice? Where should you put that money? We know that community media makes a huge difference in the people's lives that we're able to touch and feel and work with. But we need to be able to demonstrate that. We need to, for to have that funding to be able to do it. So if government took the view that maybe rather than put all their money through the Central Office of Information and their various agencies, if, say, through the CMA, they put a proportion of their ad spend through us, or rather through the radio stations that make up the community media landscape in the UK, that would give us an opportunity to be able to use that to seed fund, shall we say, campaigns, initiatives that raises the temperature, raises awareness of the media so the public can see it, feel it, touch it, get involved.
Great meeting you, Paul, and thanks very much for talking to Third Sector.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you, Dom.
And for more information on that, it's wordonhealth.com. And now it's off to Wickham Sound. I'm in the studios of Wickham Sound, and I'm joined by Pippa. I don't know, are you the curator?
I'm one of the founders, one of the three founders, and I'm programme director.
Okay, so we've established the formality of your hat. And this is the first station, actually, of all the stations I visited here in the UK. I think this is the nearest to launch that I've ever been. I actually came here before you launched, and it was great to meet your volunteers. And there's a very strong vibe and a very strong kind of gathering sense of purpose about what you were doing leading up to first the licence application and then being awarded the licence and taking it to air. So a few weeks in, how's it going?
Oh, it's going at 500 miles an hour, if I'm honest. We're just at the beginning of week four. So usually at this stage of the cycle, we'd be a bit down in the dumps thinking, oh, we've only got a few days left. But everything is just really taking off. We've really hit the ground running. The response from the public, from the local community, has been overwhelming. And we're just inundated with inquiries from people who want to come on air, who want us to help them promote their events, who want to come and volunteer with us, who want to come and spend money with us. So, no, we're delighted at how it's launched. We went for a soft launch because we didn't want to have all the flags flying for something at the transmitter to fall over. So we thought we'd just slowly get ourselves out there and let people know we're here. And then we had a big event in town last week and we didn't want to clash with that. So we haven't done an official launch as such, but very much out there in the community already.
And how many volunteers have you got here?
We have about 110 altogether. The phone's ringing every day, new people joining every day. And I'd say probably 30 of those have joined since last year.
And how do you define what a volunteer is?
A volunteer can be, they wear many different hats. There are, of course, people who are on air, people who are presenting programmes, contributing to programmes. But there are people who work in the office environment, people who do research for us. But we also have ambassadors. So they're people who we might not actually see here in the station, but they're out and about at business groups or out in community groups, really flying the flag for us and picking up new contacts and feeding them into us. So there's many different roles, and we're always advertising for new volunteers. I could probably fill the schedule twice over with people who want to make programmes. But the challenge is balancing that with people who are happy to answer the phone, or people who want to be journalists or sports reporters or historians. They want to go off and do research and so on. So, no shortage of interest on the volunteering front.
And there's lots of different reasons why people would volunteer at a community radio station. But one of the wins, it's really a double win, is that the station needs to have content. It needs to have people, as you've articulated, to deliver its operations on many, many levels. But the win for the individual then is that they're gaining something. And a lot of what that is about is confidence, in some cases helping with self-esteem. But primarily it's about skill development. And where are you as an organisation with helping people develop their skills, which may be part of radio training and maybe servicing people ambitious to develop their careers in media or radio, but more often than not, it's about transferable skills that help people's opportunities, whatever they want to do.
I had a lovely note the other day. We have a young man working with us at the moment who I think is on the autistic spectrum. And when he first came in here, he was very quiet. He kept himself to himself. But he came to us with an HND in live music production. And he had expressed a desire to work in something in the audio field. So we set him to work, producing jingles, looking at interviews, working as a production assistant in the studio. And I got a lovely note the other day from his contact at the job centre saying how she had noticed a big change in his confidence, in his ability to communicate. And, you know, that has set him up well to go and get a paid role somewhere else. And I'd be very, very sorry to lose him, actually. So that's one example, and I guess that's quite an extreme example. But it's things, as you say, it's confidence. There was a woman who came in who has been at home for 15 years raising three children. And she came in and said, I don't know who I am anymore. I just know that I want to come and be part of your team. And she felt that she didn't have anything to bring, which is remarkable, really, because so often we hear in radio and in the media that, yes, you may have been at home for 15 years, but you've got time management skills, you've got conflict resolution skills, team building skills, all of those things that come from being a parent, especially with three children. So I had a long chat with her. I explained all the different things that she could come in and do. And she left here walking on air, and she's back tomorrow. I can't wait to see her. But also, we've brought people out of retirement. You know, so we've got some volunteers who are in their 70s who said this gives them a new lease of life, because they now spend the week planning their programs. They're excited. They're looking forward to coming in. So, no, they're not looking to have a new career, but we've given them self-confidence. We've given them the knowledge that they are valued in today's world, and that their life experience is full of stories that can be passed on to younger members of the team. We've got a number of ex-BBC engineers and producers who work with us, and they're full of stories that we could sit and listen to them for hours, to be honest.
So, as you say, people develop their skills not just to increase their employability options, but it's just generally part of general well-being, I suppose. What do you see as the key reason for Wickham Sound to be?
It's to bring the community together. We have people of all walks of life. There are some very wealthy parts of High Wycombe there and the surrounding areas, some very, very wealthy areas. There are also families who are facing some very real challenges, some children in poverty. So it really is a very broad spectrum. We have communities from many different parts of the world, but there's no one thing in High Wycombe that unites everybody. And that was really our challenge, was to be a uniting force, to be something that everybody could feel a part of. And that is one of our six main objectives.
Okay, well, it's early days, but you're also quite a mature organisation in the sense that you've done a number of trial broadcasts and you've clearly got a great volunteer count. So early days, but it's wonderful to see that you're up and running and to see those ambitions and laudable ambitions to being the voice for this part of the world coming together so quickly. So wonderful being here, and I look forward to returning with my third sector microphone a few months down the road. But in the meantime, Pippa, many thanks for talking to Third Sector.
Thank you.
We are in radio.
And that's it for this week. If you'd like to get in touch with the programme, do contact me, domchambers@summervalleyfm.co.uk, or my office line is 01761 568 004. Follow me at the Dom Chambers. That's enough to be going on with. I'll catch you next time.
Online 24/7, this is the radio industry's very own radio station. In radio.